Well, believe it or not, we are back for the 250th time. I was just sitting here just before hitting the record button and thinking about like how many days, 24-hour days that comes out to be. That'd be like talking nonstop, 24 hours a day for days on end. It's an amazing thing. But it's great to be back, and it's great to have you back. If there was no audience, there would be no point in doing this, and I'm glad you're back. If this is your first time maybe stopping in to listen to the show, I appreciate you stopping by. I hope you'll give the whole show a listen. If the first part sucks or something, you hit a part, just stay with me. It may or it may not get better. We do have a Christian-specific segment. That's roughly halfway through the show. Stay for that. Don't think that's just going to be some run-of-the-mill MCCBS. You might get something out of it, and you might even find that the most entertaining part of the show. So be sure and stick around for that. Like I say, it's roughly the halfway point, and I say roughly because sometimes it's way a little earlier or a little later, but it's roughly the halfway point of the show. This is the part of the show where I do pass the offering plate around. I know everybody's asking for donations and support, and I know y'all get tired of that. I do. I get that. But if you do get something, there's nothing behind a paywall here, by the way. You get the show regardless. If you never send anything, you're still going to get the show. I mean, I'm still going to do it. But if you do get something out of it, put something in the plate. I do appreciate it. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. It's easy. Look on our description page for my show right here, this Parish of the Patriots show on Radio Albany. You'll see I've got it all right there in a nice, neat, tidy package. Got snail mail. If you're into the cryptocurrency, got Bitcoin, got the Monero. Email address down there to drop your notes. Or if you have a different cryptocurrency, what is commonly referred to as shitcoins. I will take your shitcoins and I'll get you an address for that. Drop me an email. I'm not proud. I will take your shitcoins because beggars can't be choosers. So, but it is. It is all very much appreciated. It's not like I expect y'all to give me your life savings or something. But if you can drop something in, I do appreciate it, really. It means a lot. With having that been said, see, we're only 2 minutes in. It's not like I spend a lot of time dunning y'all up for money. Let's get into the listener supporter mailbag. One of my fun things, getting the Christmas cards that I like. I was not getting the Christmas cards. Nice. I like this one. GPD, bless you. Thank you for all you do. Best wishes for a Merry Christmas and a New Year from Andrew. Thank you very much, Andrew. And same to all of y'all. I do think of y'all. You know, don't just sit here and like y'all are some abstract concept. I don't. I think of y'all, and I hope that God blesses y'all, and I think of us as like a community. I don't know y'all. I mean, I not met y'all face to face or whatever, but I do. I think of it as I think we have like a connection. Maybe that's just me. Mr. T, and I do. You know, last week, Mr. T's notes didn't come through, and as suspected, one of these envelopes looked like it got attempted to be eaten by the mechanizations of the post office, but it did survive. So I did get two from you this week, Mr. T, let you know what came through. I'm just going to combine the two because this is the last one. This is the last I got of listener supported mailbag this week. GBD, thank you for doing God's work and for taking care of RA while Sven is a political prisoner. And I want to stop there for a minute and remind you, I've been saying it on, I don't know if y'all bother to catch my daily national shows. I know those are kind of a mixed bag. Some of them I think come out pretty good. Some of them mid, I'm not gonna lie, they're mid, but I am putting the best effort. It's not like I'm phoning it in. It's just kind of a different format I'm not really that used to. But if you have been checking out the Daily National shows I've been doing here, I've been encouraging everybody to drop Christmas cards to Sven. It's a tough time of the year. Some people have a hard time of the year just normally going about their lives for whatever reason. They get depressed this time of year. I don't know why. And you know, if that's okay, you know, if that's the case for regular people, how much more so would it be for Sven being locked up in prison? I don't see any indication. I mean, his spirits are very high. He's very positive. But still, he's locked up. I encourage y'all to send a Christmas card or a note or something to him. Just let him know we're all thinking about him. So I just wanted to shove that in there for just a moment. Continuing on, this continues from Mr. T. It occurred to me that if I was to look into joining a mainstream church, there are some questions I would ask the pastor before I bothered. One, do you believe there are only two sexes? Two, would you marry a gay couple? Three, do you think women should be pastors? I wonder what answers I would get. May give it a try soon. Well, don't forget, Mr. T, there's always the Passover factor, what I call the Passover factor. And that is, if you roll up to any church and you're thinking about joining, and look, I don't have a problem. I don't discourage people from going to a physical church. I mean, we do our Christian specific segment here, you know, but I don't discourage people, you know, from going and trying to have fellowship with people IRL. I really don't. But there is the Passover factor. Like, if you're thinking about, I'm going to go check out this church, and you roll up there and they got the Israel triangle, inverted triangles flag flying anywhere on their grounds on a flagpole hanging off the side of the church, just like the Passover from the Old Testament. You just pass that over. Don't even bother stopping. You ain't going to find the Lord there. Just keep on going. They've got a sign. They got the flag of who they're serving right there. At the best, they're very deceived and off track, and you don't want to jump in and throw your lot in with a bunch of people who are completely lost. You know, if you're trying to make your journey, you don't want to pitch your lot in with people who are lost, wandering around, have no idea where they're going. I mean, they may have good intentions, but they're lost, and they're one. Don't fall in with people who are lost. You can wind up wandering around where they are. Just keep on going. Just be better off forging your own way. That's at best. At worst, they're being led by leadership that is intentionally leading them astray for profit. That's right, I said it. Pass it over if they got the flag. Yeah, you do have to wonder, but what kind of answers you would get from that? You know, what kind of role do you let women have in your church? What are they doing? You letting them make decisions? You read these stories where pastors attempt to take a based, i.e. a truth position, and that winds up the church council, which is oftentimes got quite a few women on. They're offended and they fire him for speaking the truth. If they have a history like that, you can just keep on moving. Don't waste your time. Just say it. Just no point. I don't, like I say, though, I just want to say again, I don't discourage people. If y'all want to join an IRL church, you know, do it, but do it with your eyes open. Don't just follow what people are saying blindly. Look for the truth. If your pastor standing up there and you went 3 Sundays in a row and every day you're like, man, this guy got a good spirit-filled message and he hammering the truth, this guy's spot on. You go the 4th time on a Sunday and he's preaching something that goes against the truth, you don't blindly just, well, he was right them other times and I don't want to be like disloyal or something. Don't do that. God gave you a brain. Just keep using it. Don't get led astray. Talking about people losing their way, you know, and being lost and astray. And bear with me, because what I was going to talk about here, it's going to sound like I'm preaching early. Not that there'd be anything wrong with that, but some of y'all, that may not be your thing, and I'm not. I put this in the first part of the show and not in the Christian-specific segment for a reason, but as I get into this, it may at least partially sound like I'm starting to preach early, but bear with me and hear me out. You know, we all, by human nature, it is so much easier. We like to look at the extreme examples of, you know, how of other people's failings. You know, this is why people jump on salacious gossip. You know, when they hear about another man's failings, they jump on that. They're quick to snatch it up and talk about it. This is another way in which men act feminine in today's society, and they don't even realize it's a feminine trait. Men generations ago, if they heard a gossipy, you know, salacious rumor, a sensational rumor. It's always, you know, rumors are always negative, by the way. They heard a negative, salacious rumor about somebody. Men of generations ago would say, well, we shouldn't be gossiping. We don't know that's true. The women might be over there yattering away with one another about it. And that's kind of just, you're not really surprised, but the men would not do that. In today's world, men will do that. And they'll jump all over hearing something. We'll jump all over. Did you hear about so-and-so? What's that? He was at the hotel last weekend with 3 Nigerian hookers and half a kilo of cocaine or something. It doesn't matter how absurd it is, how much truth or what. It just sounds good when you look at somebody else and say, man, what's wrong with that guy? Ain't nobody want to hear about the things that they got going on. And as believers, our duty is to work on ourselves. One of the things I make it a point to constantly remind y'all, because it keeps you away from frustration and it keeps you mentally focused. You only have control over yourself. If you're frustrated with the world and with your life, look, what can you do about yourself? Don't be worrying about what other people do, because you can't control that. If everything you want centers around other people making different decisions, you're going to be really upset and angry. You're going to be focused. As Christian believers, we're focused on ourselves and continuing to spiritually grow and mature. You see why I told you up front, I'm not preaching early, but I have to put these into context perspective. Bear with me as I try slowly, ever so slowly, to get to the point. You can go in a church. You went into a regular church, and the congregation is sitting there. It's in America, so the vast majority of the congregation is morbidly obese. And the preacher might preach on a good based sermon about homosexuality, and everybody's like, "Ooh, preach it, brother." But he ain't going to do no preaching on gluttony, is he? Because that ain't going to go over. Because he ain't nobody want to hear that. It's easy as we look at this screwed up, sinful, fallen country that we live in. It's easy to look at these ridiculous images and these outlandish demonstrations of degeneracy. You know? You got the internet, so you see all this content. There's some city somewhere having a gay pride parade and all these morons taking their little kids to it while some guy in leather's out there on a float twerking on top of a 4-foot dildo or some shit. And it's easy to look at that and say, good night. How far has our country fallen? And the answer is worse than you think. That sort of behavior is amplified by the media and everybody because it catches your attention because it's so extreme. There's some guy on a float twerking on a dildo. Good night. Look at how degenerate this is. I'm a saint compared to those people. But those people still remain a very small segment of the population. If the media didn't tell you about them, you wouldn't even know they existed. It wouldn't have any bearing or any effect on your life whatsoever. They would just be doing whatever. What amazes me is when I look at the little things. It's like when we look, turn inward and you look at ourselves a little closer to home. The way normal people, everyday average people, people that aren't the tiny percentage of people twerking on a dildo at a gay pride parade, just regular people behave. How comfortable with sin people have become. You know, how people sell themselves short and don't take any pride in themselves. One of these things is, you know, a man's word. A man's word doesn't mean anything anymore. I'm not talking about politicians. I'm not talking about somebody else. I'm talking about regular run-of-the-mill people you would consider on your day-to-day life to be pretty decent, good people. And I see that by and large, my experience in this life is that by and large, a man's word doesn't mean anything anymore. People become so hollowed out and so desensitized to this world around them. They're so busy staring at the gay pride parade images, and nobody realizes how far in these other areas that people have slipped away. Man's word. I'm at this point where if I'm talking to somebody, just a regular run-of-the-mill person, and they tell me, I will come see you tomorrow at 2:00 and we'll discuss this matter or whatever. I have to now, you start from a base point that they're never going to show up. And if they do show up, it ain't going to be 2:00. It might be 4:00. And if they show up at 4:00, they're not going to be like, oh, I'm sorry, I got hung up. course, you might be sitting there thinking, you have a phone. You could have called me and texted me and let me know. They're just going to show up at 4 o'clock or not at all and act like nothing's happened. Like, that's not unusual. That is now the norm. I realized when I was thinking about talking about this, I thought, you know, I'm just going to sound like some old, just going to sound like some old person bitching. But, you know, not that long ago, not that many generations ago, if you called another man a liar, you better be ready to back that up because you just insulted his honor. There was a time there would be a gun duel over simply calling a man a liar. And yet today, nobody even gets that offended because everybody does it. Everybody lies. If people say, I will be there tomorrow at 2, and they decide, it's not convenient for them, they don't even bother to let you know because that's the normal. Everybody's doing it. And you see, that's one of the ways in which what we think of as the slippery slope works. When you look around and everybody does that, well, it's now normalized. And as a result, a man's word doesn't mean anything. You can't take people at their word anymore. It doesn't mean anything anymore. I think because of its widespread nature, you look at it and people most likely, you point this out and people brush it off. Well, it doesn't really matter. What's that big a deal? You know, it's not that big a deal, but it is because it's widespread. And I believe in a lot of ways, this is more corrosive to society than the tiny fraction of a population that the media amplifies twerking on a dildo at a gay pride parade, because that is a small, tiny, isolated incident. No, it's not good. I'm not condoning it. But the more widespread corrosiveness is this other stuff that everybody does it. Everybody does. Nobody worries about that. It's not convenient for you. Just don't show up. Just don't follow through. You said you would do it, but you changed your mind and don't feel like doing it. So you just don't bother. You don't let anybody know you changed your mind. You just leave everybody hanging. And the people on the other end of that are just to grow accustomed to that's how it is. And we have no trust in our society. And we wonder why. And we blame the politicians. We blame whoever. But the fact of the matter is we don't want to look at ourselves, just as a fat ass congregation in a church doesn't want to hear a sermon about gluttony being a sin. We want to look at these dazzling images of other people's degeneracy so we can say, well, at least we're not those guys. And yet we're in control of ourselves and we don't want to look inward and say, well, you know, where am I at? Does my word hold any weight? If I tell somebody I'm going to do something, am I going to follow through? And if something comes up beyond my control, not just, oh, it's convenient for me, but beyond my control, do I at least give the courtesy to let them know, hey, this happened beyond my control. I can't do what I said I was going to do, but let's do this. Or do you just not care? Are you just apathetic? These are the more subtle ways, I believe, that our society has become, you know, so corroded, you know, so breaking down. We look at these fantastic, ridiculous images and we say, that's it. Well, it's more of a symptom. But the more underlying current, the more widespread things are a little more subtle. And yet it's tempting not to look at them because that means looking at ourselves. How are we living? How am I living my life? But you see, those are the things, it's important, because those are the things you have power over. You can look at yourself and improve yourself. You can make different decisions. You have that power. You've got free will. You can choose how you live your life and the improvements you do or you don't make. That's where your power is. You don't have the power to stop the gay pride parade. Well, you may think you should and whatnot, and that's fine. But the fact, the reality is you don't. But what you do have power over is yourself and how you behave, the value your word has, the way you live your life, you know, the nature in which you enter, the way in which you interact with other people. That's what you have power over. That's what you have control over. And if you'll start, the thing is, if you start exercising that power, it is because you do so, it is self-empowering. You people go through their lives. I'll see these people, you hear about these people, and they're always frustrated and they're always aggravated because they feel disempowered. They feel like they have no power, no effect in the world around them. Well, you do. Every man has power. He has power over himself. You don't have power to force other people to do what you want them to do, if that's your view. And most of the time, the more frustrated and angry a person is, a man is, that's his view, that he should somehow have dominion and power over other people and the decisions they make. And so they feel frustrated, angry. But you do have power. You have power yourself. But see, that's a lot more difficult. We want to view ourselves as perfect. We're not like these other people. And we fail to make the improvements we need to make in our own lives. And yet, ironically, that's where our power lies. I think one of the things the media does is keep us bedazzled looking at all of these other people, all of these other images, and all of this. Because the more we're bedazzled looking at a computer or a TV screen, the less likely we are to stop and look at ourselves. Turn off the noise. Sit in silence and reflect on ourselves. What do I look like? What kind of person am I? People, by their very nature, don't want to do that because they might not like the answers. And if they don't like the answers, that implies that they need to be working on something. And so they shy away from it. And then get frustrated because they can't control other people and the decisions they're making. And winds up being this silly circle. I'm not preaching early, but I've got to say this. Because I read a story the other day. It wasn't a story. It was an article written by somebody. It was they started the article off talking about how they believe in God. But, you always wait for the but. But this person says, I do question God. I believe in God, but I do question. I'm not afraid to question God. This is a pretty big but, by the way. For instance, why does God allow these bad things to happen? Why does God allow people to die? Why does God allow there to be starvation? Why the usual? Like, this is shit you should be over in, like, second grade Sunday school if you have anybody teaching you anything at all. You know, a grown man and starts off professing, I believe in God, but I don't understand these most kindergarten preschool levels of understanding the Lord. I'm not preaching early. This is for everybody. You can understand if you come across stuff like that and go, what's going on with these Christian believers? Maybe you're not a believer yourself, and I'm explaining this to you. And this will help you understand the world, and it relates directly to what we've been talking about this morning. God gives every man walking the face of this earth has free will. That's the price you pay. When you look around and you say, why are these children bombed to death? And why are people starving? And why is there all this misery in the world? I'm telling you the answer because God gives men free will. If you want to be a robot that has no mind of your own, then yes, God could intervene and just micromanage the world, but then the whole thing would be pointless and we wouldn't exist. If you want to have, when people bitch about that, and what they really mean is, well, I should have free will, but all of these dumbasses should not. And I can understand, believe me, I can understand the temptation of thinking that way because I'm tempted to think that way at times too when I look around at people in the world. But everybody gets free will. Everybody gets free will. And that's how it works. The price for that, the price for your free will, because it's one of those, either everybody gets it or nobody gets it. You know, it's kind of like the whole idea is, probably not the best illustration, but I'll say it anyway. It's kind of like the idea people spout off about free speech. You know, they claim they believe in free speech. I'm becoming more and more of a free speech skeptic every day, by the way. I think that was another one of those bait and switch tricks. But anyway, not to get off into the woods with that. You have somebody that will proclaim they're all about free speech, but what they really mean is they're about free speech for themselves. They will want other people having free speech if they disagree with them. You don't get a deal where you're the only one that gets free will, but everybody else has to do what you say. Now you're elevating yourself to the position of God, by the way. You're saying God ain't doing it right. I'm really not preaching. The price for man having free will. You know why those children are bombed? Do you know why there's people starving? Sometimes certain things are natural disasters you don't have control of, but by and large, most of the things that everybody has problems with in the world is because somebody else used their free will to make really evil, wicked decisions. But they still have free will. And that's the way it works. All or nothing. Either everybody gets free will or nobody does. And so you like having free will. You like being a person making your own decisions, walk on the face of this earth. And that's all well and good, but you have to understand, you having that means all of these other morons get it too, and they're going to make moron decisions. All these wicked and evil people also get free will, and they make wicked and evil decisions. They plot wicked and evil schemes, and they come up with really, really ridiculous wicked and evil plots. It's the price we pay. And this brings us back to your power is in this free will that God has given you. And they can't take it away from you. They can throw you in prison. They can execute you. But at the end of the day, they can't take your free will. You can make your own decisions. I'm not saying they can't force you to do something. Somebody puts a gun and chains you up and lifts you up off the ground and throws you into a swamp. You didn't decide to do that. That was done to you. That was them exercising their free will. When it comes to, y'all don't know how hard I work not to wander off into the woods. Speaking of thrown in the swamp, this whole show would be in the swamp if I didn't have this incredible amount of self-discipline to keep things more or less on track. The point is your power is in your free will, your God-given free will. And the way you use that, exercise that power is to make your decisions and to work on yourself. That's, I'm telling you, it's where the power is. People say, but you're just saying that. That's an easy answer, but it's not. It's the most difficult answer. Collectively, as a society, if enough men use their free will to look inward and begin improving themselves and correcting their own mistakes and starting to fix the things that they have the power to fix, what can I do? Well, I can start by if I tell somebody I'm going to do something, actually following through and doing it. Well, that isn't going to change the world. Maybe not. But if enough men decide to do that, it can change the world. Be bedazzled by the ridiculous images. What can you do? What do you have power over? What can you change? What can you change in the world around you? You look at things you can't change and it makes you feel powerless, and then people go spiraling down this despair spiral, which can ultimately lead to becoming weird and nuts and insane, and then you get manipulated into doing weird, nuts, and insane things. Anyway, there's the information. I don't know if you can do anything with it, but there it is. Now you know. At the end of the day, you do have power. You're not powerless. Your power is in your free will. And your power lies in, okay, well, what are you going to do with it? What are the decisions you're going to make? How are you going to live your life? You sit around, it's like I saw a meme here a while back that says, you know, if your plans or if your view is, starts with something like, if everybody would just, then nothing's going to come of it, because everybody is not going to just. Everybody is not going, because you don't have power over them. I'm telling you, that's where it's at. That's what you can do. You can sit here because you'd like to hear somebody spout off a grand plan to change the world, and that's what you want to hear. And yeah, that sounds nice, usually because it doesn't require any effort on our own part. Hear somebody talk about a grand plan for the world, and all you got to do is sign here. All you got to do is go along. All you got to do is whatever. Your power ultimately lies in yourself and your own decisions and how you choose to live your life. If the whole world goes to hell in a handbag, and that's where it looks like right now, it's kind of where it is. you know what? If the whole world decides to go wallow in shit, I'm not going to wallow in shit. I'm going to stand up here on this rock and look at everybody else out there wallowing around the shit, looking at me like I'm crazy because I don't want to get down in there with them. I'm going to choose to stand above it. And I think if enough of us continue to work and choose to stand above it and work to stand above it and work to crawl out of it if you're in it, I think maybe just little by little, that might actually manage to make the world a little bit of a better place. We're going to get into the Christian specific segment. It may seem like a segue because it's almost like I've been preaching thus far, but I wasn't very much. Come on, let's keep rocking. You know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. I actually want to start off this week's Christian specific segment by actually reading from the Bible this week, because it's not going to be very long. Otherwise, you know how it is. I just tell y'all where it is. You can read yourself. We just talk about it. But we're going to look at Acts chapter 15, verses 36 through 41. And some days after, Paul said unto Barnabas, let us go again and visit our brethren in every city where we have preached the word of the Lord and see how they do. And Barnabas determined to take with them John, whose surname was Mark. But Paul thought not good to take him with them, who departed from them from Pamphylia, and went not with them to the work. And the contention was so sharp between them that they departed asunder one from the other. And so Barnabas took Mark and sailed unto Cyprus. And Paul chose Silas and departed, being recommended by the brethren unto the grace of God. And he went through Syria and Cilicia, confirming the churches. Now this is one of those little sections of Bible verses that most people would probably just kind of skip over. It would seem almost irrelevant. And it's one of those that I came across just the other day in my own Bible reading. And I found something interesting enough that I thought we would discuss it here. And this is, of course, the contention between Paul and Barnabas. Now, I mean, it's pretty clear-cut contention. They come up with the idea. Paul says, hey, let's go back. We've been here for a little while. Let's just go back and check out all the places where we've started spreading the word and see how the churches are doing. And obviously this sounded like a good idea to Barnabas. And Barnabas is like, it's cool. I'm going to say Mark here. We're going to take Mark with us and we'll go, three of us on a journey. And Paul says, no, I don't want to take this guy. We took him once before and he didn't stay with us. We got so far, or maybe things got tough. And when the going got a little tough, this guy split. I don't want to take this guy. And it says the great contention, they had a contention rise up between them. Now, obviously, you notice how in like Christians today, the MCC, but just in Christians in general, Christian people today are scared to death of contention. Another word for contention in this context would be conflict. And because the church has become so feminized, much like very much the rest of our society, that people think conflict and contention is somehow a bad thing. You can't have any contention. That's a bad thing. We don't want any confrontation and we can't have contention. Well, obviously that's not true, because Paul and Barnabas had a great contention. This was something neither one of them was willing to budge on. Now, what I find interesting about this is the way they handled the contention. And again, we're told here that it was a great contention. This was something both of them dug their heels in and wasn't going to budge on it. So ultimately they decided, okay, Barnabas, you just go ahead and you go this way and you take Mark with you. Paul is like, I'm going to choose someone else and we're going to go our separate ways. Because the contention was at the point that the only way they were going to wind up going together was somebody was going to have to basically give up on what they believed. Either they took Mark with them and Paul had to basically take his concerns and throw them out the window and feel like, he didn't get what he wanted. Or Barnabas would have to throw Mark under the bus, as it were, and say, no, well, okay, then fine. And the solution was, look, we're just going to go our separate ways. The interesting part to me is what you don't see in this great contention. There's no feminine emotional behavior portrayed here. Men today, and I'm talking about men, it's called feminine behavior because these are feminine traits. It's not a thing of putting down women. It's just that's their nature. And it's natural. It's a part of the natural order that women behave in a certain way. What is not natural is that so oftentimes in our world today, men wind up handling contention in a feminine manner. They cannot have a great contention without getting emotional and we're going to have, you know, generally speaking, a man hates having contention with a woman because he's going to have to deal with this hysterical, oh my gosh, this means you don't care about me, you know, hysterical emotional thing instead of just hammering a decision out and coming to an answer. But you don't see that between these two men. They had a great contention and obviously neither one was going to budge, so they came up with an answer. It doesn't say there that when they parted ways, Paul said, I'm never speaking to you again. I'm not talking. And Barnabas didn't stomp away and say, you know what? I've spent all this time with this guy and I can't stand him. And I hope I never see this guy again. Hope you don't run into any bandits. You wish you had Mark with you. You don't see any of that. What you do see is that when they realized, when they recognized that they weren't going to be able to work this out, it was better off to simply go their separate ways. That's what they did. There was no hyper-emotionalism, and there was no, here's another facet of a feminine way of handling contention, there was no emotional manipulation. You know, trying to get your way, trying to somehow win here. Imagine if you were, say, in a MCC church meeting and you're sitting with the elders of the church and one group wants to do, I don't know, some project or another with the church or hire a certain person to work in the youth department or something at the church and the others are dead set against it. What do you think would wind up happening? What you're going to wind up happening, I can tell you what's going to wind up happening. You're going to wind up, both sides are going to start trying to emotionally manipulate the other side. Well, why don't you like him? Well, I mean, what's the problem? I mean, really, what? So you don't think that Mark can be forgiven because what, he left us? I thought this whole gospel thing was supposed to be about forgiveness and giving people a second chance. And again, these are emotional traits of contention, and you will see them so often today in men. You expect this with women. That's why men, like I say, men don't like dealing with women when it comes to contention because you've got to deal with all of this. But you're not supposed to be dealing with all this if you're dealing with men. You're supposed to be able to say what your position is. The other guy says his position. You see how dead set they are. If one, it's not that big a deal. Okay, yeah, we'll forget about it and we'll go on with the original plan. And if such isn't the case, then we'll change the plan. In this case, the plan was, you go ahead and take him and go this way. I'll pick somebody else. We'll go that way. And hey, I'll see you when I see you. No emotionalism, no hysterics, no claiming somebody has now personally affronted you. And this is a personal insult. And how dare you? And my gosh, I thought we were friends. I thought we were besties forever. And now you're doing this. It amazes me how often you see men behave in this manner. And that is a feminine way to handle contention. That's not what Paul and Barnabas did. So often it seems that as men, we've forgotten not only how to, but that we're even supposed to stay in control of our emotions, not be emotional. And this can cover many aspects. I've said this before. If you make it a decision made in the midst of emotionalism, 9 times out of 10 is going to turn out to be a poor decision. If you find yourself in a spot where you need to make a decision about something, look at yourself and be honest. If you're in the middle of some kind of emotional turmoil over this decision, take a break. You know, tell people, I'll get back with you tomorrow or the next day. Put off the decision. Give yourself some time to get detached from that. And these men had a little, I believe, it doesn't tell us how long the contention lasted. If this was a discussion that happened over 30 minutes or 3 days, it doesn't tell us. But whatever you got to do, if you're in the midst of emotionalism, buy yourself some time. Don't make that decision in the middle of emotionalism, because again, 9 times out of 10, it's going to wind up being a poor decision. Get detached from that and make a masculine, non-emotional driven decision. And if it's a contention with somebody else, with another man, for goodness sakes, neither one of you should be getting emotional about it. Understand, you just have a different view. They have a different view. You see if one or the other maybe can be convinced. But if that's not the case, then let it go. Quit trying to be right. It's not a game. This isn't a personal affront to you or to the other person. State what you want. I don't want to take Mark with us. State what you want. Well, I think Mark is okay. I do want to take Mark with us. Don't sit there and just say, well, I'm just going to bite my tongue and not say, because I don't want to make a big deal out of this. No, they spoke up for themselves. And they stated there, and they both of them believed in their positions. You notice in the story relayed here, you know, there's nothing here saying that one side was necessarily correct or not. They just had a different opinion on the matter. And they came to the conclusion, the best answer here then was, he goes this way with this guy, I'll choose someone else and go this other way. This was handled in the most masculine manner. Nobody, like I say, nobody was throwing anything or screaming or pounding the table or yelling or making emotional complaints or manipulating and asking, well, don't you really care about this or that? Or maybe you're just not very forgiving after all. None of that. It was handled in a very correct and very masculine manner. And I just thought it was something worth pointing out. Because again, this is one of those things that you look at and you probably just kind of brush over, because it's like, oh, okay, well, they had this contention. They're just telling us that they went their separate ways. That doesn't mean anything to me. But we look around the world today, and can you imagine two average guys just simply being able to handle it in this kind of masculine and mature manner without emotional manipulation and this feminine behavior? I just thought it was something worth pointing out. And again, you only have control over yourself. Recognize these things in yourself. I mean, I try to recognize them in myself, because we live immersed in this society. And recognize when you're behaving in a feminine manner and when you're getting over the top emotional about something. Don't do that. You know, just simply don't do that. That's not the way it should be handled. Speak up for yourself. Don't sit there and just bite your tongue and feel like, well, I can't say my opinion on this. State your belief. And if there's no room for compromise from either side, handle it in a masculine manner. Don't try to emotionally manipulate, and try to avoid making decisions if you are in an emotional state. Be honest with yourself and say, well, I'm getting kind of emotional here. And that's not going to lead to anything good. Get free. Get free from all of that. What else? I've jotted things down. This isn't really show notes, but every day I try to seek out the Lord and study the Bible and pray. And I think of different things. And when I think of things that I think, well, this will be worth sharing on the show, I do jot them down. Most of them don't make the show. Some of them do. I saw a story the other day talking about, of course, big news continues to be what's going on in the Middle East, what Israel is doing in Gaza. And you may be wondering, what the heck does that have to do with the Christian specific segment? Well, I'm going to tell you. I read a story the other day, and apparently Israel is using some sort of AI to help them pick out which civilian targets to bomb so they can do mass slaughter. And the thing that caught my eye was they've supposedly named this AI system the gospel. We talk about the spiritual aspects of the conflicts and the things we see in the world, and those that are of the world think we're just talking nonsense and gibberish, and these things are just, I don't know, pure coincidence or something. But you see, Satan is active in this world. The spiritual element is reflected in the physical manner. No, it doesn't mean people are necessarily sitting around and having a radio call with Satan or something, but it is reflected. The spiritual conflict is reflected in the natural world. And so you as a believer, you can see these things and you see the inversion, which is a trait of the satanic element. Why would they, who would find it necessary to call their AI the gospel that brings about death, slaughter, and destruction? You could have called it anything. They could have called it, I don't know, some kind of hammer of justice, or I don't know. But for whatever spiritual reason, it was called the gospel. Well, of course, as believers, the gospel is the gospel for us. The gospel is the gospel of Jesus Christ, which brings life, which brings hope, which brings the fulfillment of your purpose on this world. You see, they name this system the gospel, and you see the direct inversion. What does it bring? Death, maximum amount of slaughter, choosing who gets to be slaughtered. What area will be leveled? What level of death? What can bring about the maximum amount of death? Now, you can sit here and say, oh, well, that's just, you know, they just named it that. There's not that deep of a meaning. And I'm telling you, it's not that there's a deep meaning. It is, there's a reason that the inversion is present. It's a signature. It's a telltale sign of the spiritual. When Satan is there, there's always going to be this inversion. The inversion of the truth, the inversion of the light, the inversion, in this case, of the gospel. The gospel of Jesus Christ brings life and hope and purpose. They name this system the gospel because it brings the exact opposite. I think some of this is made clear to us, and it's so in your face so that people won't have an excuse. They can't say, well, there was no clues. When you have this in-your-face inversion, when they do something like this and you understand the element of the spiritual being reflected in the physical world, when you look at this and maybe just having it pointed out makes you go, oh, a light come on. It's like, hey, yeah, that is weird. Why would they do that? That's disgusting. That is offensive as a Christian believer that they would intentionally do that. It's almost like they're mocking us, and in a sense, they are. And yet you will have these false teachers and false prophets and false preachers in this country, and they will say, I've seen them say, that the only reason that God blesses America is because we stand with Israel. I've seen this. I don't remember which one of them said it. I read the quote. The only reason God continues to bless America is because you look at America and there is all of this sin present. And you know what? God continues to bless America. And do you know why God continues? In spite of America's sin, God continues to bless America because we continue to send all of our money and our support and our weapons to Israel so they can blow up Palestinian kids. That's the only reason. You want God to continue to bless America, we got to continue to send those bunker busters. We got to bust the bunker of an apartment building. These kids aren't going to slaughter themselves. When you have this in your face inversion, they call this system the gospel, it you don't have any excuses. It's in your face. They're not even being subtle about these things, and yet you have these deceivers, and they will make these pronouncements that this is what you're somehow, as Christian believers, supposed to be doing. This is what God wants you to do. Of course, they justify this. They have like one line out of the Bible, which they take out of context and don't even begin to understand. Or perhaps they do understand and they're just intentionally deceiving. You have to wonder when they make these sort of statements, I mean, what is their definition? In what way is God blessing America? You look around America today, and it's obviously a nation that's completely turned away from God. And if you turn away from God, then God is done with you. God is not blessing America. I mean, in what manner is God blessing America? God is blessed with a bunch of homeless people and drug addicts on the street. Ooh, hallelujah. You have to think it's a personal thing. Well, I've got that new $100,000 Cadillac Escalade back behind the church. I'm doing pretty good. Thank you, Lord. I'm going to continue to preach to support Israel so I can get another Cadillac SUV. I have a feeling the money for that Cadillac SUV did not come from the Lord. I have a feeling it came from some other source. But it is. It just is an amazing thing to view it from the believer standpoint, not just as, you know, what's going on in the world and such as that. But when you look at it with the spiritual element in mind, and you look and you spot these inversions, these satanic elements of what is going on here, and then you see these false teachers that supposedly are knowledgeable in these areas, and they're taking people in the exact opposite direction. And you just have to shake your head. Anyway, enough of that. Enough of talking about those people. Let's get back to talking about us. We only have control over ourselves, and we're always on a mission to fulfill our role in this life, which is to spiritually mature, to come to understand the Lord and as much as we can, and to be as prepared as we can for the day of the Lord. Always remember, the day of the Lord is not way off somewhere. You people, all my life, I've heard Christian people talking about, maybe I'm going to see the day of the Lord, or maybe it won't. It may not happen in my lifetime, but I might. No, you will. I guarantee you, every one of you is going to see the day of the Lord. The moment you step out of this physical body, which is the only thing holding you in this realm of time, is this flesh. The moment you do, you will see the day of the Lord in that instant. When you breathe your last breath, and your spirit leaves your body, your physical body, you are going to see the day of the Lord, because you're stepping out of time and you're going to be there. We're going to see the day of the Lord. And we live our lives in this manner, and it doesn't make any sense to the worldly. It looks like foolishness. In 1 Chronicles chapter 28, no, I'm not going to read it in this instance. You can read it yourself. But King David wanted to build a temple, a physical building for the Ark of the Lord. They talk about a temple for the Lord. He wasn't going to physically live in there, obviously, but he wanted to build a temple. And God had told David, no, you can't build the temple. I'm not going to let you build the temple because you've shed blood. You know, you were a warrior king. I mean, David was one of the top guys on God's list through the Bible, but he was a warrior king. He shed much blood. And he said, you're not going to be able to build my temple, but your son can. You're not going to see it. Now, we see this throughout the Bible is also reflected of what happened with Moses. Again, there's these patterns, and you see the patterns, and when you understand the patterns, you can look at where you're at in the pattern in the world around you now, where you're at in the pattern. David is told, you're not going to be able to build the temple. He wanted to build the temple, you know, but God said, no, you're not going to, but your son will. Now, David didn't just throw his hands up and go, well, that's that. I guess I'm not going to build the temple. Fine, then. David spends all his time then preparing everything. He doesn't try to build the temple in spite of what God says. He's obedient. God simply said, you're not going to build the temple. So what does David set off doing? He starts collecting the gold. He lines up hiring the workmen that are going to do the building, the silver. He gets all the lumber together. He makes contracts with other countries to import lumber. He sets up, so we're going to have the workmen. He gets everything in place so that when he's gone and his son sets out to make the temple, all he's got to do is have it built. He doesn't have to spend years securing the supplies and getting the gold and the silver and the bronze and all of that together. He's got it all there. It's all the materials are piled up. He even gathers up all the elders, the nobility of Israel. He gathers up the nobility of Israel and says, this is what's going to happen. My son is going to build this temple. This is what the Lord has told me. I've got everything ready. Y'all support him so that he can do this, because this is what God wants done. He didn't just throw his hands up and say, well, doesn't have anything to do with me. God don't want me to build the temple, then so be it. I'll just forget about that and move on to the next thing. He puts this effort in to something that he's never going to see. That's how you know when something is actually really important to you. It's one thing to put in effort for something, and at the end of it, you're going to see the fruit of your labor. And there's nothing wrong with that. But how much more so dedication to something does it take to put all of this effort, as David did? He put all of this effort into building a temple. He was never going to see it. Not in this life. He was never going to see this temple be built. Yet it didn't matter. He gathered up the materials. He got everything. He said, okay, well, then I got to get to work. I mean, you're not going to build the temple. That doesn't mean now I'm going to sit on my ass and just wait to die, I guess. He starts going to work. Okay, what can I do? Well, okay, I'm going to start gathering all this stuff. I'm going to have everything in place. So when Solomon takes over the throne, all he's got to do is start building. That's, everything will be there. I've got the workers lined up. I've got the contracts for the lumber. I've got the lumber piled up. We've got all this big storeroom for gold, silver, bronze. We're ready to go. All it's got to do is the building has to start happening. All of this work, all of this effort, all of this dedication for something he was never going to see. It's the same, that same pattern plays out with Moses. He leads the people out. Then the people, because of their sin, God says, y'all ain't even going to see this land I'm going to give you. He allowed Moses to walk up and kind of look out over there. It's going to be that over there. But Moses never got to go live there either. And yet he didn't stop what he was supposed to be doing. He was working towards something that he wasn't going to see in this life. And yet he continued to fulfill that duty. We live our lives as believers building the temple of the Lord, building our own spiritual maturity. And you're not going to see the real fruits of that until you leave this life. This is why it takes faith. It talks about you accept Jesus Christ in faith. This is your faith. It takes faith because, like David, you're putting this work in to spiritually mature, and you're not going to see the fruits of that work. I mean, you can see some of the way you live your life, but you're not going to see the actual reward, the fruits of this labor, until after you die. Now, once again, to the world, this looks like foolishness. To the world that says, this is it, you just got to get everything you can now, this looks like absolute foolishness. Why would you put all of this effort? Why would you spend your entire life working towards something that you yourself admit you're not going to really actually see the reward for that, the outcome of that, until after you die, after you leave this world? It sounds like insane gibberish to the worldly. But yet, like David and like Moses, we follow. You see, this is how you know you're in God's plan, as it were. This is how you know you're fitting in, because you can see where you're at in this cycle that God, this pattern that God follows. Like David, we work. This is what it means to accept Jesus Christ by faith. We're saved by faith. And that faith is played out because we start building, we're working, we're trying to understand God, we're struggling with sin, we're struggling in conflict with the world, we're doing all of these things, and we're not going to see the payoff for that until after we die. While the world is saying that's other foolishness, you better just get what you can and enjoy what pleasures you can in this world and just do what you want to do right now, because tomorrow you may die, and who knows what's going to happen then. But you see, we do know what's going to happen by faith. It's not something we can touch. It's not something like we can drag these people and show them, point over the hill and say, see over there, that's where we're headed. They don't understand. They can't understand. This is why it's by faith. And it's demonstrated by our deeds, because we are making the effort. David didn't just say, good, well, we're going to build a temple when I'm gone and Solomon takes over. Y'all take care of that. He proceeded to take action. He's securing lumber. He's securing workers. He's getting everything lined up. He's constantly taking action. Now, if he thought that the temple wasn't actually ever going to be built, he wouldn't have done that. But you see, God said the temple is going to be built. Your son Solomon is going to build the temple. I'm going to let your son Solomon build this temple. David had faith that God was going to do that. If he didn't think that was actually going to happen, or maybe it would and maybe it wouldn't, why would he go and spend all of this money out of his own pocket? Why would he spend all of this time, all of this effort, all of this negotiating, all this purchasing what needs to be done, storing this up, getting workmen lined up, doing all of this work, if he didn't truly believe it was going to happen? And yet, It was something he wasn't going to see. The world would look at David today and say, why are you putting in that effort? You're not going to get anything out of it. We wonder why the world around us is falling to ruin when people aren't building towards the future. Even regular everyday people generations ago built towards a future. They invested in their children and then their grandchildren so that maybe they would have a better future. You don't see that anymore, do you? It's, well, if I'm not going to see it, if I'm not going to see it, what's the point? What am I going to get out of it? What's in it for me? There's no investment for a future. What's the point if you're not going to get anything out of it? The people have fallen so far away. It's written that the wisdom of God is foolishness to the world. And you can pass over that and kind of get it, but kind of don't get it. But as we look at this, what we're talking about right here, you see, the world thinks this is gibberish. They think this is just crazy because you just get what you can now. That's all that matters. Who cares? You're going to be dead. Who cares? It doesn't matter anymore. David, Moses, and you, as a believer, you put all of this effort you're putting on, the way you live your life, as you spiritually grow and you learn about God and you try to understand the Lord, and maybe just these discussions we have a part in it, I hope. As you read the Bible and you seek and you continually try to refine yourself and get further from sin and closer to God and understanding the truth. And as you understand the truth, as it relates to that, as it corresponds directly to that, the closer you get to the truth, the more distasteful lies become, the more you hate the lies, and the more you try to just, every time you see yourself with lies in your life, you start rejecting those harder, and it becomes, you can't stand them to be present in your life. Everybody else walling around and they think it's all just good. And you put all of this work and all of this effort in for something that you're not going to see the fruits of that. You're not going to see the results of your effort until after you leave this physical body. Like David, like Moses, you're putting the work and you're putting the effort in now because you have faith. Just as David had faith that the temple was going to be built, we have faith in Jesus Christ that by grace, we're going to see the results of this effort. Our spiritual maturity is going to bear fruit on the day of the Lord when we step out of these bodies, when we step out of this physical realm, when we step out of this temporal realm. Then we're going to see the temple built. We're going to see the glory of the Lord. All the other people are going to be like the folks on the outside of the ark banging on the outside when the floodwaters are coming down. Open up, let us in. Too late now. You had your chance. We're going to wrap up that note. Hope you got something out of the whole show, especially the Christian specific segment. I know I said this before. This is why I do the show. This is it. This is the reason. I hope you got something out of all of it, though. I really hope you did. I hope you got something out of our discussion today. I appreciate y'all stopping by. I hope to see you next week right here for the Parish of the Patriots.